Welcome to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange, sharing stories of midlife reinvention. I'm Vanessa Finney, and I'm joined today by JPR's operations manager, Dave Young. We're going to be talking about a couple of midlife pivots he went through and the nonfiction book that ultimately came out of it all. Dave, welcome.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. So, Dave, the book you first published in February of 2022 is called A Mild Case of Dead, The Unseen Toll of America's Obsession with Health, Fitness, and Weight Loss. And you're currently revising it for a second edition. That's what sort of put this on my radar. You wrote it to share your philosophy on the role that our own inner wisdom plays in health, fitness, and many other areas of life. But I want to start a few years back when you were first wanting to share these ideas with the public. You took a different route than a book. What was your life situation when you were 50, and why did it motivate you to go back to college?
Well, my life situation at the time was a series of jobs in broadcasting, which were very rewarding and satisfying for me. But the industry itself was going through some big, big changes. And it was difficult to rely on that business for a consistent income, especially the kind of income that I thought, you know, I wanted, needed to make, and just a general lifestyle that I wanted to maintain. So, you know, it was troubled waters in that particular business. But the entire time of my life, I've always been kind of a gym rat, you know, for lack of a better word, or somebody that had, more energy that I knew what to do with. So, you know, I found ways to channel that in ways that focused on health. So when I came up to this point in my career where I thought, okay, well, what else is out there for me? My mind immediately went to the civic mindedness that I've always brought to my career. And I considered my work in broadcasting to be, to some degree, a civic minded goal for me, an intent. It wasn't just the entertainment value. It certainly wasn't just the money, but it was kind of the, you know, it was that I felt like I was participating in a resource for people that was entertainment to some degree, but also much more. So I got a lot of job satisfaction out of that, but I wondered where else I might be able to find this outlet that I thought was contributing to both individuals and society as a whole. Where would this might play out? And I landed on the notion of health, fitness specifically, as an avenue for that. And so I embarked on that by going back to school originally, and secondly, by opening a business, becoming a personal trainer, becoming a health coach and wellness coach, and then eventually opening my own business.
Okay. And you were about 54 when you bought that health club. What did you hope to accomplish there?
You know, I didn't really have a major goal for this. I only knew that it's something I wanted to be involved in. And I was willing to let this take it where it may. You know, to go where it may. I didn't have any particular expectations for it, other than I hoped, you know, it would be something that I was in a little bit more control of as a career, number one, that it would provide me with an income that was, you know, sustainable. But other than that, I didn't really have a goal for it. I wanted to see where it would go. I want to see how I could elevate the conversation about those subjects.
And in your opinion, where was the conversation at that time? And what time period was this?
This was probably late 1990s, early, right around 2000. So the conversation at that point was about two things specifically, as it occurred to me. So what occurred to me was is that it was about cosmetic values, number one. The second aspect of all of this was athletics. Performance.
Competition.
Competition is a part of that, definitely. So we had those two things that were always a part of the conversation around health and fitness. But I didn't see them as really noble goals. I didn't see either one of them as really noble goals, because the real prize is how we feel about ourselves and how we feel about life and our place in it, and where we're going as individuals. That was the real prize.
Is it your view that people can start to feel some sort of vague dissatisfaction in their lives at any time, but a classic time is after a big event, a shakeup, or midlife. Is it your view that we feel this vague dissatisfaction, and because we tend to also compartmentalize, we say, oh, something specific like fitness, if that's kind of a squishy term, but we turn to that as a solution for this big sort of nebulous feeling?
Well, I think it, you know, it depends on where we've trained our mind to go. This is part of the case that I make about health and fitness, is that the messaging we get about those subjects and life itself is largely confined to quantitative values, mm-hmm. or, you know, the more observable values. And to me, that misses the point of life. So the point of life is how you feel about that. So when somebody faces a turning point in their life, I would like to think that where they go is inside. Mm-hmm. What feels the most satisfying thing for me to do right now? And you know what? That might not be how you feel 6 months from now. That's one of the beauties of being a human.
Right.
We are designed for change.
So how did you sort of return that personal experience, that more holistic experience, to the pursuit of fitness when you were creating your own programs? How did you try to address that?
Yeah, it happened in very subtle ways. I just knew that I didn't want to preside over a business or, you know, a concern like a health club that was really only about superficial values. I knew I wanted to bring more of how I felt about my own life and about what the real prize of life was to my business. And trust me, I ran into a lot of opposition. I wouldn't really want to call it opposition, resistance, I would say. But it was mostly because people were very ingrained in the old paradigms about fitness and health.
A reminder to our listeners that this is My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney, and I'm talking with Dave Young. We're tracing his path from fitness coach to health club owner to author. So, Dave, how did that actually play out? So you had these ideas. You're working within the confines of, I'll call it the fitness industrial complex, who designed to set up these scientific markers, these external gauges of our happiness, you know, weight, pounds we're lifting. Were there any success stories among your clients when you either working privately or at your own health club where you thought for a while that you were on the right track and could make a difference?
Oh, yeah. I don't think I would have lasted even as long as I did in that business if there weren't some success stories. There were definitely people there who were using this opportunity to contribute to their lives as a whole. And I connected with those people so much more than I did the other kind. But the real challenge that I ran into, and the thing that the unavoidable fact that I couldn't avoid, was the fact that a health club is really the wrong environment. And that was the conundrum. I mean, the health club is really the wrong environment. It's very artificial. It's very regimented. It's very fact-based. It's all that stuff that tends to be dehumanizing. When I was going for the opposite.
Right. It supports that compartmentalization. Although, you know, you were taking a tried and true approach. Lots of people try to embed themselves into a situation and sort of subvert it from within, mm-hmm. right? So that might have been your idea. Mm-hmm. But I know from reading your story that even though you could take a certain amount of control in the fitness industry by owning your own health club, you started to realize that the coaches working for you were still really easily influenced by this constant stream of new science on diet and exercise regimen. So what did you observe there with the people that worked for you, and how did you handle it?
It's the paradigm that got in the way. No matter what language you use to describe what it is that you're doing, there's a paradigm behind it. And the paradigm is the easy road. So in other words, it's what everybody's talking about. It's what everybody is attracted to. It's what everybody wants to believe, as opposed to maybe some harder truths. And so what I witnessed is that anybody that stepped foot inside the health club was already being informed by the paradigm, more than a possibility.
So there's this existing conversation
yes.
out in culture, and you saw them walking in under the influence of that before you can even get your,
exactly, yeah.
get your own influence.
And so it made me realize that perhaps based on what I knew that I wanted to contribute to the world, to life, to individuals, to myself, maybe the health club is a wrong setting
right.
for that.
And that took place over a long time, right?
Yeah.
About a decade?
Sure.
So then you gradually stopped believing in your own solution or how much the gym could be your solution, and you sold it at age 64, so
right.
that was another pivot.
Right.
What happened then, and why do you say that going to the gym or health club can be a poor choice for some people?
It depends on why you're there.
Yeah.
And what I observed in the vast majority of my clients in my health club, which I have to assume is at least some kind of a sampling of the world as a whole, what I observed is people were there for one of two reasons, either because they felt like working on their bodies would improve the really important matters of life that perhaps they might have been avoiding,
mm-hmm.
or the work of being in the gym was the avoidance itself.
Ah.
So in other words, people were using fitness and health practices as a way to avoid some of the bigger issues of life.
Interesting. Yeah, they were sort of maybe sublimating that itch that they had. Dave, have you been personally changed by these ideas? How did this start playing out in your own life, or was it always?
No, well, you know, the seeds of it, I
yeah.
think, were there for a long time. I try not to question the values that I hold because I think they come from a place that is harmed by questioning. In other words, I think we should just listen to them and be happy for them. But you can't help but be in an environment where you work so closely with individuals and you hear their stories and you hear their struggles. It's amazing as a health coach, as a fitness coach, what people will tell you about their lives.
Hmm.
And you can't help but be changed by those stories and by seeing transformations, whether they were really served the intent or not. You know, there's stories playing out all around, and they were incredibly valuable for me to understand more about myself and my own values and where I was headed in life and what I might do to help other people rise from the struggles that they have internally.
Okay, and we have about three more minutes. You talk about the idea of our personal wisdom versus external markers. So tell us how we can know, in your opinion, when health practices and exercise are wise versus not wise, destructive even.
Yeah. So I have something called a physical guidance pyramid. And it's just a three-layer pyramid of how you inform yourself on your own choices about your health, about your physical state, and about the bigger issues of life as well. So, for example, level one would be the first question that I would like anybody to ask themselves if they want to improve their physical state or if they want to improve their life. The first question for me is always, what is my body telling me? Because your body is telling you something. I can assure you of that. And some great examples of that are food cravings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is your body telling you? That's a little more physical. There's a whole spiritual side of all of us that is constantly informing our choices. So there's the first question that it would be valuable to ask yourself. The second question is, what choices would I be making if I lived 10,000 years ago? In other words, historically, how did humans conduct their day? Because we have to know that it was supportive, at least to some degree. They didn't have very many choices. And the third is science. The third level is science. So we can talk more about that after the break, and I'll elaborate on all of those. But those are the three questions that can guide you toward choices for your health that you can have a lot of confidence in.
Okay, we'll get more into that after the break. It's Handy talking with a radio professional who hears that cue music. You're listening to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney talking with Dave Young. We'll be right back. Welcome back to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange, exploring stories of midlife reinvention. I'm Vanessa Finney, and I'm talking today with JPR's operations manager, Dave Young. Dave, before the break, you were just getting into an overview of your physical guidance pyramid. Why don't you elaborate on that now?
Okay, so just to recap a little bit, three questions that we all would be well served to ask ourselves when it comes to addressing our lifestyle. And, you know, our bodies are always a reflection of our lifestyle, which is one of the truths that hit me owning a health club, because what I saw was people coming into my health club for an hour a day, the sanctioned duration for exercise, for an hour a day, working their hearts out, going back out into the world and to a toxic lifestyle. And those people were bound to be frustrated, as you can imagine. But it's because the real health that matters, even the real fitness that matters, is always a reflection of your lifestyle. It's always a reflection mostly of how you spend the other 23 hours, not the one in the gym. You can create certain cosmetic values, but I contend those are of lesser importance than what you could be creating with those 24 hours every day.
So as part of the gist of this is to make the cosmetic be sort of a byproduct, but really you're trying to pursue so-called health and fitness to serve your entire life as a whole.
Right. So the question is, if you could feel better or look better, which one would you choose?
That's a good way to put
it. And we have to, we have to ask ourselves those questions just to ensure that we haven't gotten caught in the loop of just being acceptable to others, just following the sanctioned path, as opposed to what your body is telling you at that moment and what your life is telling you.
Okay, so that I suppose that's the foundation of your physical guidance pyramid, listening to your body.
Listening to your body,
and what's
definitely.
The next level?
The next level is, what choice would a historical human have made? I pick a date, 10,000 years ago, whatever, pre-agriculture, how we evolved. What choices would a human make? Well, clearly the goals are survival, number one. Number two, improving the quality of your life. Those were you didn't really have much opportunity to get beyond either one of those things.
Maslow's foundation.
There was only so many hours in a day to when you are, wilderness survival, essentially. Those are the things that we are trying to achieve. And how would we go about that if we didn't have any of modern life? How would we go about that? Modern life is a great corrupter of our humanity and of our physical state in general. We have to be aware of that. And really, oftentimes it doesn't take much more than an awareness of that. And I'm not suggesting anybody needs to go out and hunt their food and, do some of those basic things that, we have better ways of accomplishing in modern life. But we do have to be aware that modern life is not a wholesale improvement.
It is. I like how you put it in your book about how people historically, pre-agriculture, perhaps the paleo diet is sort of founded on this as well, though I know you're not aligning yourself with that completely. But just for a marker, so no, it's not efficient for all of us to go hunt our own protein. But it is a good marker, as you say in the book. Historically, humans ate what was local in season. It was naturally organic, and there was less of it than we really wanted, but it was enough. So that is sort of a good guide star to measure the modern corruption against.
Right, right. And I'm glad you pointed out that example, because that is pretty much exactly what I'm talking about. Great. When I talk about, what would a human do? So, again, it's just an awareness that will guide us. There doesn't have to be any hard and fast rules, right? It's just an awareness, a principle that will guide us.
And what is the third aspect of your physical guidance?
The third one is, what does science say? Now, the funny thing about science is the closest thing to the truth that we will ever have about any given subject. But it isn't unique to us. And this is the my only problem with science, is that it is based on data, data that is acquired over time based on, cause and effect. And we all know the scientific process. But none of that has anything to do with where your life is at this moment. And that is something that is important. That is your life. That is your reason for being here.
And when we walk in to meet our personal trainer at the gym, they don't know where we're at.
They don't
know what is the best thing for us on our journey
as a
whole.
Yeah. You're getting some kind of cookie cutter, formulaic, productized version of activity.
So that brings us to, so in your book, I should say, your book is called A Mild Case of Dead, The Unseen Toll of America's Obsession with Health, Fitness, and Weight Loss. And you're revising this. This was originally came out in February of 2022, and you're working on the second edition now.
Right.
Now you're committed to it. In it, you define life vitality, and I would love to get to that. But first, you identify four so-called phantoms.
Yeah.
To sort of distinguish between our personal knowledge of our own experience and the sort of external markers. And a quick reminder that you're listening to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange, and I'm joined by JPR's operations manager and author, Dave Young. So what are these phantoms?
Phantoms is just my word for an artificial version of something that is important to life, something that is important to the quality of life. There is an experiential component and a logical component. And the message of the book is that we are bombarded constantly with the logical versions of these qualities. And nobody is making a case for the experiential versions. In other words, this is where wisdom has something to say about your life, but it's only your wisdom, it's your personal truth that drives that. And there is no uniqueness, no personalness of the paradigms around those subjects. And so my only point here is to raise the alarm, for example, that perhaps because of all the messaging, we have forgotten that our own wisdom has something to say about this. It's not just the numbers on your medical chart. There is another component to this, and our lives will benefit when we pay attention to that.
So is it fair to say that one of the aims of this book, your audience is just the fitness, I'll use consumer for lack of better words, since that's sort of how it is in today's landscape and marketplace. You're helping them distinguish between clinical health and experiential health.
Yeah. So the clinical version is the phantom version. And it's only phantom because it's real in its analysis, but it's not real in you.
Right, how it applies.
Right.
It is a cookie cutter thing.
Right.
You say another, along those lines, another thing that sort of leads us astray from our personal truth is how logic shows up in our daily lives. You say we're by nature unreasonable creatures. So what are some examples of logic and its limitations and our unreasonableness, on the other hand?
Well, this gets kind of philosophical, and I love philosophy. I mean, it's really a lot of the foundations of what I write about. I love philosophy, but we could be here for a long time talking about this, because what it has to do with is who are we by nature? And logic, we have an outsized capacity for logic. Logic is how we communicate with each other. Logic is how we, innovate and make improvements in our lives. But it's not where life is lived. So when you talk about communication that goes on between people, this is marketing language, and even language itself is a logical construct. There has to be some kind of shared truth there for us to be able to communicate via language.
Sure. We agree the word tree in English represents this object here.
Exactly. Yeah. But here's the problem. Logic can be fooled by bad data. For example, if somebody tells you that, okay, we can agree on what a tree is, what if somebody tells you that, that somebody who presents it with a certain amount of credibility so that you believe it, that a tree is something else entirely. Next time somebody else uses the word tree, you're thinking something that they did not intend. And that happens all the time. That happens with the word health. That happens with the word fitness. Those words don't have any solid universal definitions.
They're pretty squishy terms.
They're really squishy. And that works well for people that package this stuff for sale. I mean, we can all see all the trends, the different fitness trends, different health trends that go on. They all fly under the banner of health, but that can't be true. You know that can't be true. So we have adulterated, we can fool logic. But here's the most important thing. You can't fool that voice inside of you. Mm. That voice inside of you is always working on your behalf.
Right. Tune into it. As opposed to somebody, a fitness instructor might have the very best intentions, but they can't, by the nature of, a fitness class where they have 20 people in, they can't know everybody's personal stories and know how many reps you need to make, what actual exercise you should be pursuing.
Right. I was just going to say, so that's not to say you shouldn't be in the gym or health club. It's to say you should be aware of the limitations of that, and you should be aware that it's not about you.
What are some examples in your view of healthy and holistic, I'll call them fitness practices, that honor both your personal, I say mind and body, since you're also talking about sort of a duality between those, logic and what we're feeling in our body.
Right, right. This gets down to your awareness of what your purpose in life is. What do you value the most? How do you want people to view your life when it's all said and done? And that is the, a pursuit of that and movement in that direction is the only source of true satisfaction with your life. So let's say that your real purpose in life is something that is very demanding. Let's say you're some kind of a home caregiver. And it is your passion. It is your purpose. Well, that automatically is going to dictate how you spend a lot of your time. And no matter what physical state that leaves you in, it's okay. It is the only health that really matters is the physical state that supports your purpose. So what we need is a much broader understanding of what health is. It's not just the numbers on a medical chart or you're standing in some competition. Are you aware of what your life is about and how you spend your time furthering that? That's the only health that matters.
So to plug it in, that makes me think of what might be called functional exercise. So you don't necessarily want a hard body, but you want to be able to enjoy your grandkids, and you find yourself winded after a few steps chasing after that toddler.
Right.
So maybe that's what you can do, cardio in support of that, because that's part of your purpose, to really show up for your family.
Right.
Or even just, being able to pick things off a tree and, just very functional.
Very functional, obviously very functional, and very diverse. This is what we do with our exercises. We compartmentalize our exercise. I don't even like the word exercise. I call it activity or physical challenges.
Right.
Those to me, have a much broader meaning and a much more useful meaning. So the things that we do in life that support our purpose are bound to be more diverse and suit a life that supports that purpose.
In your book, you define maximum aliveness. How do you see that quickly as we wrap up?
Sure, vitality is most of it. What when you open your eyes in the morning, do you leap out of bed or do you drag yourself out of bed? We want everybody to leap out of bed knowing that there's something exciting is going to happen to them today.
Amen. Well, thanks for joining me today, Dave.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to My Better Half on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Vanessa Finney, and my guest was Dave Young, operations manager at JPR and author of the forthcoming second edition of A Mild Case of Dead, The Unseen Toll of America's Obsession with Health, Fitness, and Weight Loss. And that's it for today's Jefferson Exchange.